This reading is so rich with so many different, really profound, of course, lessons in it. I had to pick and choose carefully as I was thinking about it last night. There's a chapter in Swami Kriyananda's book, The New Path, called Intellectual Traps. And he begins that chapter by telling us a Greek myth. And forgive me, I forgot to attune myself to being Greek, so if the pronunciations aren't correct, we'll know why. But the myth is of Icarus and his father, Daedalus. And they are in Crete, and they have to get out of Crete. And the father is somebody who is a creator of things. He's created a labyrinth, and he's used to building things. So he fashions wings for them made out of wax and feathers. And he says to the son, be careful, don't fly too high, because if you do, you'll get too close to the sun and your wings will melt. But Icarus takes off and he loves this sense of flying and of being high, and he keeps thinking he can go higher and higher. And he, in fact, does get too close to the sun, and his wings melt, and he crashes to his death. And the myth says he crashes into the sea that forever after was known as the Sea of Icarus. And, of course, the myth is being told at the beginning of this chapter about intellectual traps to remind us all that when we discover these newfound powers within ourselves, when we have an experience that we've not had before, it's very easy to throw caution to the wind and, as in this instance, really fly too high. And we can forget that we need to pay very close attention to those with greater experience. So, of course, Swamiji is showing us, speaking right to that line between intellectual understanding, emotions, and experience as the only true teacher. A beautiful story in terms of our reading. But it raises this question about the question of how are we to make sense of things that we're being told that we have not seen in this physical world the way we see things, mostly with our eyes and with our senses, and we've created a world around us, or we're born into a world that just makes perfect sense to us. And it's a question that's been puzzling people for thousands of years. Just the other day, when I was driving back down from Ananda Village, I was listening to a CD, a recording of Paramahansa Yogananda's talks, which was wonderful. But in this particular talk, I believe it was Dr. Lewis, his first disciple in the United States, though I don't know. I just think that because of some of the talk that was going on. He was never introduced, but he introduced Yogananda. And it's the sweetest little talk that he gives, really saying, why are we even here today? Meaning here with Yogananda, here with all these guru bhais. And he goes on to share some of his experience of a life that was based in Christianity and how hard he was trying to understand the scriptures and how virtually impossible it was for him. He couldn't make that leap from his understanding of things, from his mind, to what it was that Jesus was trying to say. And he's saying, as he introduces Master, we're here because we must be near somebody who has had an experience of these truths, who can explain them to us. And he says, how many of you have picked up the Bible and really felt like you've understood it? And everybody in the audience just giggles. But now they understand it. Of course they do. I've had many people here come up to me and say to me, Jesus is really my guru, but I've never understood those teachings until I came to Ananda, because we have this avatar who is one with Christ, who can explain it to us. There's a story of Saint Francis, a true story, when he was writing the rule, which is what the basis for the Franciscan order. So this was about in the 1100s. He wanted the church to accept his rule. It was important to him. So he made this journey to have an audience with these bishops and the vicars. And he presented the rule to them. And they all said, this is impossible. First of all, it's so different from anything we've ever heard. We simply cannot accept it. And furthermore, it's humanly impossible. So we don't think the church can accept your rules. You know, the Franciscan order is based on, a lot of austerities, poverty, just many austerities, we know that. So these people in the church, and they were probably also thinking, we certainly don't want to have to live by these. But there was one bishop there, John was his name, and he said to all of these other bishops, you know, this is a true man of God, and we have to listen to what he's telling us. We have to consider this deeply, because just because it's something new, and maybe even we don't understand it, but if we just say no, when he's telling us that he wants to live by the gospel, to the word, then we are committing blasphemy against Christ himself. See, even these very high people of the church were saying, this doesn't really make sense to us. This is something too new, not really possible. But this bishop said, no, I feel that this man is speaking from Christ. And so the bishop, the main bishop, asked Francis to find a way to prove the truth of this. And it's not the point of this talk today, so I won't go into it, although it's a delightful story to read. If you want to read St. Bonaventure's book on St. Francis, it's just filled with all of these delightful stories of his life and the visions that came to Francis in the form of parables that he then took back to the bishop the next day. And of course, the bishop had had a dream just the week before, because Divine Mother had her hand in this. And so the bishop understood that what Francis was saying was the truth. And of course, the rule was accepted. Even when we read stories about Anandamoy Ma, you're getting the benefit of the fact that I taught a 3-hour class on the saints yesterday. So I have all of their stories right here. You know, Ma would sit very quietly with her disciples, and she would just have these ecstasies, and they would feel something, and they would know that they were in the presence of the divine. But to the person, she would also give them some experience, perform a miracle, so that there was no doubt in their mind. They weren't just accepting her word or her experience, but she was saying, let me just show you this so that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you will believe these truths, because the only way you can know it, the only way we can possibly know anything, is once we've had the experience. Jesus himself in this reading was really saying, don't accept this on blind faith. Do your own experiment, which we've been told. Look at the fruits of your labor. He was saying it also about teachers, because another lesson in this reading was, how do we choose a teacher? And he was saying, you'll know them by the fruits of their labors. So he wasn't saying, just listen to me and accept what I say. And that's what Ma was doing. By giving people these amazing experiences, one day she was I mean, there's hundreds of them in a little book that's 80 pages long. You just can hardly put the book down. But one day, in the middle of one of her ecstasies, her body used to just twirl around and make all these geometric designs on the ground. But somehow people knew that it was a true inspiration. So nobody was ever put off by this. As person after person tells these stories, in the middle of one of these reveries, she jumps up and she says to her devotees, immediately, go and get me as many first aid supplies as you can find. Bring me bandages and creams and splints right in the middle of kirtan. But nobody questioned her. And they ran out and they got as many supplies as they could. And they weren't back 5 minutes when a man just comes stumbling in who had been in a very bad accident out on the road. I mean, over and over. So everybody sat there. They knew what they had just seen. They didn't have to just believe somebody's words. They were given an experience like that. But again, many of them. I'm right near the end of a book that is quite extraordinary. It's called Proof of Heaven. Perhaps some of you have already read it. It's an amazing book. I don't know if it's a little more dear to my heart because it's a story that's told by a neurosurgeon who did all of his training at Duke and Harvard, and he was faculty at Harvard. And he, in fact, I know of the man. He's come up with many of the highly advanced neurosurgical techniques that we use right now, stereotactic surgery of these tiny little things in the brain. I mean, very, very well-known, total scientist, did not believe in God, and in fact was having such a rough time for a lot of reasons in his life, which I don't want to go into now. He was questioning whether he even believed in love. And this man developed, a very rare form of bacterial meningitis. But in fact, he is, as he says in the book, an N of one, for any of you who know statistics. He's the only person in the history of all of medicine who has ever contracted this form, this meningitis, from this particular bacteria without having had a neurosurgical procedure first, which would introduce the bacteria. There's no way to have what he had. And for those people who get it from some procedure, 90% of them die within 3 days, 10% have a chance of living if they're caught right away, and they're all brain damaged, literally. This is 100%. This man was in a coma for a week and then woke up one day. And what he describes in his book is the experience he had for the week that he was in this coma, where he met God and he traveled through what are called different lokas, different spheres. He had a guide, and this guide, and you can feel him, he is trying so hard to find words in our language and to speak to us, but always saying, I know this is impossible. More important, he's trying to speak to his colleagues. After years himself of hearing stories from other people who would say, but this is what happened to me when I was under anesthesia, or my husband told me 3 weeks before the tumor that the tumor was coming, or he'd be going, oh, yeah, you know, brain tumors and bleeds do funny things to the mind. He never believed it. He could never really be there for these people who were having these experiences that they knew were real. In fact, with one of them, he's reminiscing about some of them. And he said, the whole time in my arrogance, I felt like I was there to comfort her. Oh, yes, honey, we know about this, but you'll get over it. He said, only now do I understand that she was trying to comfort me before I performed surgery on her husband. She wanted to say to me, don't worry, Dr. Alexander, everything's going to be all right. We've been told that. We know that beyond a doubt. And this man comes all the way around and he says, I don't just believe in God now. I know God. And he says there is no way. He says this, these are his words, or close to them. No way other than diving deep into your own consciousness through prayer and meditation and discovering these truths that anybody could ever talk you into them or share them with you. I'm always reminded of that very simple analogy that Master gives when he says you could spend a long time trying to describe the taste of an orange to somebody who's never tasted an orange. They're not going to get it. You take the tiniest little bit of orange, you put it in their mouth, that's it. They know what orange tastes like. But you can talk and talk, and it won't happen. And that is precisely what this physician, Eben Alexander, it is such a beautiful example of this knowing that you need to have this experience. This man had this profound experience of something that he's been adamantly, brilliantly, with great words and many articles, denying his entire life. And now he's trying to say to everybody, this is true, but you can only find it by going inside. And then Jesus really says to us, don't take any of what I'm saying on blind faith. Don't hear these definitions of the truth. They're not the same as truth. Words can never do it. Find your own practice and don't make mistakes about it. Don't think that any definition that you're hearing, that those words are the same as the experience. Over and over, he asks us to go inside. And he reminds us, often through many of his saints, that once we do that, not only will we know the truth beyond a shadow of a doubt, but we will be able to share that truth. The story of, this I did not read yesterday, but the story of St. Anthony just came into my mind. St. Anthony lived to be 105 years old. He spent the last at least 60 years alone in the desert. And this was about in the year between 200, 250, 300, somewhere in there. One of the bishops of Alexandria sent somebody to him, living in total seclusion for all these years, and says to him, we need you. We're having these battles. Was Jesus the Son of God or was he the Son of Man? The battle is raging, and we need somebody who knows. And Anthony makes this trek across the desert, and he describes very beautifully what it was like for him coming into the city after 60 years of silence. Can you imagine? These Greek bazaars. And he stood right at the edge of all of these people. He didn't make a big speech. He didn't use a lot of words. He just brought his wisdom. Everybody knew. There was total silence. And he said, I have seen him. And he turned around and left. And everybody who was in that space knew that this was the truth. They felt that he had this experience and he conveyed it to them. We have to find ways to go inside. We have to be willing. It's probably the most important part of this whole path is our willingness to do this. Recently, we've had this really rather profound experience here at Ananda. One of the devotees who works in our office, many of you, if not all of you, know Ananda Prem. And in November, right around Thanksgiving, she became suddenly, precipitously, very ill. She's just beginning to come back now. Well, she was a very big part of how this church functioned. And not long after that, Asha, who along with her husband David are our spiritual directors here, left for 2 months. Well, those were big voids. Those were very big, not shoes to fill. Nobody was ever trying to fill their shoes. We're not that silly. But they were big voids. And so many people in this church since that time have stepped up to their own proverbial plates, being willing to do more, to bring more, to bring their very best to fill in so that the consciousness didn't drop, the devotion didn't fade away, so that we could still be here together on Sundays. And just in closing, I'd like to share my own experience during this time. It was frightening. Ananda Prem did a lot of things that I know nothing about. I've never created an altar. I'd never worked at all in the computer. I didn't know about the systems. And right around that time, David and Asha put this word out, Shanti's now the manager of the church. So suddenly I'm the manager and everybody's leaving. And I thought, perfect timing. Okay, Divine Mother. This is really the truth, though. There were so many people involved in this, but I can't share their experience. I'm sharing mine. And one day I came into this church alone, and I sat here, and I said, okay, I'm going to do whatever I possibly can, whatever it takes, to the best of my ability, open to your guidance and your inspiration, and show up and do what I can do to keep this church and this community not just afloat, but thriving, right? So that we feel joyful. And right then, I looked at the altar and I had a vision of what one of our big altars should look like. I've never had one of those. I don't work with flowers. I mean, I bring some flowers into my house, but these big altars that have to speak to everybody, that really you're doing as a work of devotion to these masters, every time since November, every time that I have sat in here and said, I am willing, use me, show me, work through my hands, look through my eyes, literally with great humility, because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's the truth. But every time these masters have shown up, it has been so beautiful. It has taught me again and again. There's another woman in our church, Marilyn, some of you know her. And she stepped right up with that computer program she's never seen. It is complex and complicated. You print out little labels for mailings that we do here. Four programs coming together. You know, it's like those old, very complicated TV things where you're constantly saying to your husband, can you change the channel? Can you make this work? Because nothing fits right. That's sort of what this is like. But she sat down and she said to me one day, it's just because I was willing. In 2 hours, she has all these labels printed. These are miracles. And they say to us that we can do what is humanly impossible. These masters will come through us. They will let us have an experience of the divine if we're willing, if we bring our energy right there. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. The greater the flow of energy, look at us. Here we are on a Sunday with this extraordinary altar behind us, just having done a magnificent Maha Samadhi program, everybody being open and willing, because everybody in this church really wants to know God in spirit and in truth. That is how we worship God. And as long as we do that, and as long as we know that's what we want to do, Master just reaches right, not down to us, but even through us, and says, okay, your job, you just keep yourself open. I will come again and again.